So, welcome to all of you to the Boston Book Festival 2016. We're really glad that you all showed up at 10:30 on a Saturday morning. And I wanted to encourage everyone to become members of the Boston Book Festival. It's a free event once a year, but it's really supported by folks like you. And there are lots of benefits to becoming a member. So you can find out more at the info booth, you can find out more at the website, both places. Also, there's a variety of things happening all day. It's a jam-packed, amazing day. So pay attention to your schedule go to as many things as you can. And I also want to say that this is a wonderful opportunity to support the authors. And their books are all for sale outside, right outside of this room. So please support them. And my DVD is also available. And also there's a Vespa. You can enter for this red Vespa. And the place to find out about it is at the info booth in Copley Square. And I think there are also people with aprons walking around. And if I'm not mistaken, it's $10 for a ticket. So enter. Have fun tootling around on a Vespa. So can we switch? There, thank you. So not your grandma's romance. The romance world has changed a lot, and the books have changed a lot. This is not the world of Barbara Cartland and Fabio, which is what most people, not most probably in this room, but a lot of people expect. I got into this because I'm very interested in the lives of women, and here is a multi-billion dollar amazing industry and a community that people don't know much about. So I will start with the beginning of my film, which I finished recently, which is about the romance community, just to introduce the authors, the readers, and the things that we're going to be discussing today. So without more ado,
I'm so proud of what I do, and what I do is so important, and it means so much to me. I don't care what critics say. I don't care.
I will have people standing above me going, "You read that?"
We're not sitting in the proverbial trailer park in ratty nightgowns. You know, we are some pretty powerful women doing this.
Professional women.
Professional, powerful geneticists, astrophysicists, lawyers, doctors. Mm-hmm. Of course, I do spend my day in my pajamas, but, you know, I don't count.
Start with the background. Add in the wolf. We add in our stock guy. Start to add his kilt. Add the first fold of fabric, another fold for dimension, then we add in his sword, shine up his sword a little, blend that in a little bit. There we go.
I read 20 books.
Oh, I can go through 3, 4, 5 books.
I can read a book.
What's the next book coming out?
I started reading like a book a day.
What do you mean a year?
I can read a couple books.
Thank you. I'm writing as fast as I can.
I was writing full time. I was publishing 3 books a year. I was writing 3 books a year, and I've written 3 books a year since probably 2001.
Okay, let me get this straight. You were writing 3 books a year while you were a surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
And when did you fit that in?
At night. I would write at night and on the weekends. And fortunately, I'm lucky I write fast.
You want a mystery romance? We have that. You like science fiction? We have that. Historical? Sure. Paranormal? You want a dragon? We've got a dragon, an actual dragon to slay.
Who are these people? Mm-hmm. Who's writing this?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody.
Everybody's writing romance.
Gosh, there's diversity. Mm-hmm. Social class, background,
Occupational status.
Age.
Age.
Education.
Education.
Race.
Race.
Mm-hmm.
Not in terms of gender.
Because not in terms of gender.
It is predominantly women.
Mm-hmm.
Not exclusively, but predominantly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a female industry. And it's a multi-billion dollar industry.
We pay the bills.
For all of fiction.
Yeah.
For all of popular fiction.
So, thanks. So I'm very delighted to be introducing or moderating a panel with some of the most impressive authors, romance authors in New England. So we have Moretta Robbins, raise your hand, who is head of the New England chapter of the Romance Writers of America and an author of historical romance and also creator of the Republic of Pemberley, a Jane Austen website, which I recommend. We've got Cecilia Tan next to me here, who's a romance author and a publisher, creator of Circlet Press, who publishes erotic sci-fi and is also an author who writes erotic romance of many sorts. Judith Arnold, who's one of the most august of our writers here in New England, who's written more than 100 novels, mostly romance, but also mystery and women's fiction. And we have Carolyn Linden, who is an award-winning historical and contemporary romance author. So you've noticed here the breadth of historical, contemporary, erotic. There's a wide range of romance. So I'm going to start out with a question to all of you. How did you get into writing romance, and you know, what is it, which subgenre, and why would you write the subgenre you write? So, Cecilia, do you want to start?
Sure. It's my agent's fault. But no, really, I grew up thinking that I couldn't write romance, and don't know why, but I always knew what I wanted to be a writer, and I thought I would be a science fiction writer. And then what I ended up being really was an erotica writer, but there isn't as much of a career in erotica as there is in romance. But I had told my agent, I just can't write romance. I just can't do that. And I had tried to read one romance novel once when I was in college, when I was still drinking the literary Kool-Aid that was like, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that, you know, whatever. But I didn't like it, and I didn't even finish it. I was just like that, you know, threw it across the room kind of a thing. And later people told me, well, you read a bad one, you know, that wasn't the one for you, and, you know, so forth. And I have since read, you know, scads and scads and scads of wonderful ones. But yeah, my agent literally at one point, when the whole book industry in the mid-2000s was kind of, you know, she was basically like, why don't you try this, you know? And so I sat down and wrote one, and then she was like, great, now we can do more of them. And I've written 10 romances in the past 6 years, so yeah. And they've started winning awards and, you know, whatnot, and I had the total Sally Field moment of, oh my God, they do like me, you know. So, yeah, I went from selling books, you know, at conventions out of my bag that I had hand-stapled myself in the 90s to my books are in Target now. So, yeah, thank you, romance.
Judith, what about you?
Well, I was a fiery militant feminist and had never read a romance because I knew I would hate them. But I was writing great American novels that no one wanted to publish. If you wonder why there's still war and cancer and things like that, it's because no one published those books that would have solved every problem.
Yes.
And I was teaching Bonehead English as an adjunct professor to students who had flunked Bonehead English once and had to take it a second time, and really just wanted to write. And I'm going to share with you a really good secret, so that any of you who want to be successful published authors who do not want to go to business school, I will tell you, my husband was in business school, and he said, the reason you are not selling your books is because you are not writing books people want to buy. So this is the secret of marketing. Now you can skip business school. He said, go study the market. Find out what people are reading. And so I went to a store, a Target-like store in our town, and there was like a little row of mysteries, and there was a little row of science fiction, and then the whole rest of the wall was romance. So I bought a few, and I started reading them, and to my utter amazement and delight, I loved them because it turned out they were these subversive feminist parables. They really spoke to my feminist heart. They were all about women. They were by women. They were for women. The heroine was the engine driving the story. It was all about her life. She was not the love interest. And I just loved them. I started reading them, and less than a year after I read my first romance, I had sold my first romance, and there was no looking back. So
that's an amazing story. There are people who I interviewed who spent 15 years before they became published. So this is an amazing panel here, you guys. Retta, you next.
I'm a Janeite. And I
there's some in the audience.
And before I started even reading romance, I had created with a friend the Republic of Pemberley, which was in its infancy a very big Jane Austen website. It sort of died down. The people who were also Janeites, my friends at the Republic of Pemberley, said, you should try reading Regency romance. You like Jane Austen, you'll like some of these. And I did. And I'm going to tell how I became a writer is that I joined a group of Regency readers. And one of my friends there gave me her manuscript to read. And I read it, and I thought, good Lord, I can do better than that. So I did. And I sold my second manuscript 2 days after I sent it to the publisher. So that was good. And then I went back to work and didn't write again for about 10 years, but I'm writing again now.
So, Caroline. I did not know that I wanted to be a writer. In fact, I was sure I was not a writer. I was a math major in college, and I strenuously avoided any class that required a paper of longer than 8 pages. That was my bright line in the sand. But then I had kids, and there was a library 2 blocks from my house, and we had just moved to a new town where I knew where nothing else was. But I went to the library, and my kids would be quiet in the stroller long enough for me to throw a bunch of books into the bottom. So actually, I started writing them because my kids drove me insane. And they were really small. And so I would get to a point in the book where I would say, well, that's not right. That's not what she would do. I don't like that at all. And when they went to bed at night, I started essentially rewriting the endings of the books that I had really liked to a certain point, or I thought the author just had no clue and went off the tracks. So I published, I sold my third manuscript, but again, I did not know what I was doing. And my son paid me back for driving me crazy enough to write. He became my first publicist. He was 6 years old when my first book came out, and he would walk up to strangers and say, hey, my mom wrote a book. And it was so cute. They would say, oh, that's very nice. And so he'd follow up with, do you want to buy it? So that's how I got started. It was a total surprise to me and my parents and every English teacher I ever had. So, but I love it. This is a wonderful industry, and the books are so empowering to women. The whole industry practically is run by women, so it's a real exercise in leadership, initiative, economic ability, talent. I think it's just wonderful.
I will point out also that the romance industry runs in a different, the writers group runs in a different way than other writers groups. They have a very inclusive way of being. It's like, come on in, sister, we'll teach you how to do this. And a lot of other writers groups, you only get in the door if you're already published. And I think that that speaks to the fact that it's a female-dominated industry. But I want you each to briefly talk about your sort of the notion of day jobs, sort of what your day jobs were before you got into romance.
Oh, gosh. Briefly. Yeah. Well, my day jobs have been everything from martial arts instructor to part-time massage therapist to, you know, my first actual day job was in book publishing, because straight out of college, I got a job in book publishing. Knowing that I wanted to be a writer, I thought, this will be a good industry to know. But book publishing doesn't pay very well. You know, it's the lowest paying of all the communications industries. So, you know, unlike television, you know, Hollywood movies, et cetera, it's like, it's the bottom of the scale. But so my parents were like, are you sure this is what you want to do? I'm like, well, what I really want to do is be a writer, which is, of course, even, you know, below that. So, yeah. I didn't last very long in that job because I just was not spending enough time writing. So then I went to grad school and got an MFA, and I've never had a real day job since. I mean, you know, and my day job is I'm the director of publications for the Society for American Baseball Research. So I edit academic journals about baseball. So does that count as a day job? Not really. You know, that's another fun job like writer. So yeah.
Well, I have an MFA also, which is where I learned to write those great American novels no one wanted to read.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I actually specialized in playwriting in grad school and worked in the theater for a while, which, you know, writing fiction may be the bottom of the barrel, but mm-hmm. writing plays is
right.
below the barrel, the mud beneath the
right,
barrel.
Uh-huh.
So I was teaching, I taught writing, I taught English, I worked in a warehouse, I taught guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Before I sold my first book, my husband, again, he has been my biggest champion. His fantasy was always that I would make so much money as a writer that he could retire early. But he insisted that I had to take an H&R Block course in tax preparation because I was going to earn so much money once I started selling books. And being a good little, you know, a good little student, of course, I was the best student in the H&R Block class. And at the end of the semester, they offered me a job as a tax preparer. And I was so superstitious, I knew if I did not accept that job, I would never sell a book. So I accepted the job, and a month later, I sold my first book. I sold it at the beginning of February, and of course, I was committed till April 15th doing tax preparation.
Oh, goodness.
I also became pregnant at that time, so I was doing tax preparation and vomiting and writing
oh my God.
At the same time. It's a terrible blur in my mind. But after I finished my H&R Block commitment and the spring semester of teaching Bonehead English, I have never had another day job. I've written full time, which is the only way you can write 100 books, I guess. It's just to do it 24/7, 365. So,
Retta.
I was a technology director at Harvard Business School Publishing and then at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. So I spent all my time connecting computer, which was something I loved doing. But as soon as I retired, I went back to writing. Although I am making a little extra money with websites.
Carolyn,
I was a computer programmer. I wrote life insurance software administration programs. It is not as exciting as it sounds. my husband, to follow up on what Judith said, my husband is my number one hero forever because he was the one who said, quit your job. Your job is terrible. And I think he thought that if I stayed home, we wouldn't have to pay for daycare or anything like that. And it would just be, you know, me and the kids all day. And then I would write a little bit at night. And so he was the one who said, you gotta quit.
Great, you have huge variety here. We're now gonna move on to talk about readers, you and your readers. I'm just gonna turn the lights down for our next. So these readers are, I shot them on a trip. Beverly Jenkins is the author and she takes trips with her readers to places where her novels are set. So we were all in Charleston when I shot this interview with two of her readers. So tell me, guys, both of you, what was the first Beverly Jenkins book that you read?
Night Song.
Night Song. Yeah, she had it for like a year and a half in her basement on her bookshelf. And I was looking for a book to read. And I went downstairs and I was like, oh, Renee, did you read this? She's like, no, it's romance. No, I don't read romance. So I said, okay, I'll read it and see what it's like. And I read it, it took me maybe 2 days. And I was like, okay, Renee, read this book. She's like, I'm not reading that book. I was like, no, read the book. And then she read the book and she's like, oh my God, I gotta go find more. So then we went out and we found more and then we were hooked ever since. Then we found her on the net and went to the pajama parties and it was just great. We just had a lot of fun, a lot of fun.
So, there is a very special relationship between romance authors and their readers. So I'm just gonna throw this open in any order that you guys wanna speak, and if anybody in the audience wants to chime in too. Go ahead.
Well, I was I had written a book years ago that my publisher, Harlequin, was very anxious and nervous about publishing because it was the first book they had ever published in which the heroine was a breast cancer survivor who had a mastectomy. And so they said, please write something, you know, in the front to explain, you know, to prepare readers for this book. I kept saying, you know, women read these books, and I'm sure they know what breast cancer is, you know. 10% of them have already had their first biopsy, you know. But I wrote this letter, and it sort of it consolidated in my mind what the relationship is between us and our readers, which is that romance novels are women talking to other women about the things that matter to us. And whenever I sit down to write a romance, I'm thinking, what do I want to talk to women about? What matters to us? Love does, and I know in a cynical, hostile era, love matters even more. And work and self autonomy, you know, courage. These are the things that really matter to women, and I think this is what our readers want to read stories about. I'm sure all of you have heard from women who have been in you know, they're battered women. They read romances, and it gives them the courage to leave their abusers. Our books are read in prisons. They give inmate, well, I heard once from one inmate that she really liked my books because she liked the dirty parts, but that's okay, yeah. Too. Our books allow women to celebrate their own sexuality. So, you know, we're sisters. It's a sisterhood.
I think that romance writers are very open to their readers. We're all over social media, and we engage with the readers a lot. And, you know, they want to talk to us about our stories and about their stories. And I think that that's part of it, because we're open. Also, with my first book, I found four more Morettas.
Romance is the only genre that guarantees you a happy ending. And I feel like that's a big part of the relationship between the reader and the writer, is that we're in a kind of mutual relationship where it's like, we've got a contract. You know, I promise that I'm going to put you through hell, but then I'm going to give you that happy ending, because, and that's what you're signing up for when you read one of my books or any book on the romance shelf. And that's completely the opposite from the literary attitude, which is like, the artiste is supposed to sit in an ivory tower, you know, not thinking about the audience, because it isn't true art if you're considering others somehow. And that's such a male point of view. And it took me 20 years and an MFA and, you know, whatever, to realize that, you know, that is the male-dominated model, you know, that it's like the lone genius, you know, and then the works are foisted down upon the people, you know, who must appreciate the genius. And it's like, actually, that's a really, really isolating way to think about art and, you know, and creativity. And romance is completely the opposite. I really feel there is this give and take between readers and writers.
I think that readers also meet each other. I mean, mm-hmm. This is not like other fandoms where people show up at conventions and it's really fun once a year. And maybe they're active on social media, but these are people who stay in touch and meet each other, the readers, through loving the same books often. And there's well, I'll let you speak, Caroline, too, but.
Oh, I was just gonna say that I think the stories we're telling are very human, and they're all universal, whether it's set in a ballroom during the Napoleonic War, or on a future world, or spaceships running around future worlds, or in, you know, a fantastical world that never existed, or in the current day, real world, where you can relate to it and walk down the street and say, hey, the characters went to eat at that restaurant. the stories themselves are the human interactions, and I think that's what's really important to the readers, who are voracious. They read so many books. They love feeling like these characters are people I actually want to know, people I would like to hang out with, people who are going through the same things that I am, and because it's a romance novel, I know there's going to be a happy ending. So it takes away the stress of, you know, wondering, are they going to make it through this? You know they will. And I people have said that gives me strength to go on when my life is tough.
Yeah.
I will say that in terms of the only genre, I think that all genre fiction ends happily. People have come up to me and said, oh, romance novels, they're so formulaic. They always have this happy ending. And I'm like, wait a second. How about mysteries? Dead body at the beginning, guaranteed the mystery will be solved by the end. Mm. You know, science fiction, alien invaders, they will be repulsed by the end of the book. So all genre fiction has this promise of justice winning out in the end, that people who are good get rewarded, and people who are, they're about values, really. I mean, mm-hmm. sort of mm-hmm. archetypal virtues. And people who aren't good don't get rewarded. So I think that what I see in romance is that it's just this very tight community, and I think because it's women. So I'm going to show another video to get onto our next subject, which is sort of the relationship between readers and writers again, but really community. And so, thanks.
I got another letter.
Kristen Higgins.
From a young woman, and she said, I've never met a man like the heroes in your book. I've never dated anybody like that. You know, the man I was with was not very nice. And when he hit me, I always forgave him, but not really. But I stayed with him. But your books taught me what love should be and what I deserve. And I want you to know I'm not with him anymore. And that letter just staggered me. I burst into tears. I read it to my husband, and you know, I was sitting there wiping tears away at the computer. Because you don't expect to write a book that's going to have that kind of impact. And it was just staggering, you know, that book had that kind of impact on her. And I was so glad, you know, I'm so glad she left him and that she believes she deserves more. But that's not what you think when you're sitting there writing your books. You know, I want my books to be really enjoyable. I want them to be funny. I want them to be poignant. I want you to laugh and cry and read the last page and say, oh, I love that book. I want to read it again.
So one thing I've been asked a lot is this, when I made the film, are you really looking at the community or are you looking at the business? We're talking about a multi-billion dollar business. It's arguable that romance is keeping publishing afloat. And so it's incredibly popular, they're voracious readers. So is it about the business or are you looking at the community? And my answer is, it's inextricable. And when you have businesses that are dominated by women, there's no separating the community and the business. I mean, I made a film about an 18th century midwife. It was true there, about the early years of Tupperware. It was true there. So I just want to throw it to all of you guys about the ways in which this business is also fundamentally a community.
I think if you're thinking of cause and effect, the reason the business is so successful is because we are focused on the community, not because we're focused on the business. I don't think I have ever sat down and said, I'm going to write this book because I think it will be a bestseller and make me money. I mentioned the book about the breast cancer survivor before, and I had to fight tooth and nail to get that published. It's one of my best-selling novels in my entire career because I wanted to talk to my community about this subject. I knew it meant a lot to women. My publisher was very anxious, and then it ended up making them and me a lot of money. But that wasn't what I was thinking about when I was writing it. I think the reason that it's such a successful business is because we writers always have our readers and their satisfaction and their entertainment and their transcendence in mind. I've been in this business a long time, and it's been my full-time career for more than 30 years, and I've never really thought about the fact that I should be thinking more about the business probably than I do, but the reason it's such a successful business, I think, is because we are readers too. We are not just romance writers. We are the readers too. We know the readers. I know not every reader out there, every romance fan likes my books. That's okay. There are plenty of readers to go around. It's because we have that reader in our minds at all times, I think, that it's such a successful business.
I think the community aspect drives the business aspect as well. I just, maybe it's a little slightly different take on what you just said, but some of the clips from the film are of readers sitting around talking about the books that they love. And one of them will say, I read this book by so-and-so, and it was incredible for all these reasons. These were the things I loved about it. Other people in the group will say, oh, that sounds great. I want to get that book. Mm-hmm. So it's not just the publisher putting the books out there in Target. It's not just the author doing a book tour and a signing and being on social media and saying, I wrote a book about this. The community drives the business because, like I said before, the readers are voracious. They constantly want to discover new authors to read, new books. I just read 50 Shades of Grey. I finished them all. I loved them. I need more. What else can I read that will strike that same chord with me? And the romance community is there for you. We have a list of like 10 books, whatever your topic is. Game of Thrones, you like Game of Thrones, but you want a little bit less death at weddings? A little more happy endings at your weddings? You know, we have plenty of books to discuss with you and bring up and say, you know, you're going to like this. Not everybody dies at the end.
Right.
So I think that the community is wonderful in so many ways, but in a coldly calculating sense, it also drives the business model.
I think another way it drives the business is the community of writers is not a really very competitive community. They're mm-hmm. happy to bring in other writers mm-hmm. and to help them learn and to introduce them to their publisher, you know, mm-hmm. just and to promote them to their readers. It's welcoming, and I think that helps grow the business.
And it's not just writers and readers, it's also librarians and booksellers mm-hmm. and, you know, who are largely also women who are evangelizing to other women and who feel put upon sometimes by an industry that, you know, either denigrates women's fiction or considers romance not as worthy as some other genres, et cetera, or genre fiction in general, you know, whatnot. So it's like that encourages people to stick together, you know. But bloggers, yeah, I mean, the number of librarians I've met who are like, I'm the librarian at my library who likes romance, and so all of a sudden I'm the one in charge of making sure the romance books are ordered and that romance writers come to talk to our readers and, you know, so forth and so on, and it's like, it grows that way, so, you know.
So one thing that's interesting, there's a person in the film who says Nicole Peeler. She was at a sci-fi convention, and there were, you know, other authors there, sci-fi authors, because she writes sort of sci-fi romance. And her readers came up and hugged her and had gifts, and they were sharing stories about their kids. And, mm-hmm. you know, they were just like, and the other authors are just looking in amazement, like their readers came too, but... You know, it was like, hello, I really liked your use of the ray gun on page 73. So speak a little bit about your own relationships with your readers and some of the things that have happened among your readers, you and your readers.
I have one reader, her name is Alice, and she writes to me after every book. And I just, like, the book is not completely launched for me until I hear from Alice. Because she's just, I don't even know how to describe it. Like, she obviously wrote to me first, but I write back to everybody who writes to me, and we just have this back and forth. She tells me about her vacations. She tells me what she thought of the book. She tells me what she likes in romance, what she doesn't like. She wrote to me once, and she said, I read this book, and it had something I didn't really like. And I was like, oh, well, that's too bad, but, you know, I just read this other book that was kind of similar. It didn't have that thing you didn't like. Why don't you try that? it's really hard to describe, but I think these people, your readers and your other authors, some of whom go on to become authors, some of readers go on to become authors themselves, it's definitely a more emotional connection with our books, with our characters. They feel almost like these are, you know, real people that I know, which is certainly the way I feel about my characters when I write them. They become like family members for a while. And sometimes I base my characters on family members. So it's I feel like the emotional side of the book is a different level of bonding than in some other types of books. Like, I love mystery novels and crime thrillers, but I don't really want to know any of those detectives. That's fine.
I hear from a number of readers. Interesting, I used to hear more from readers before email became prevalent. I used to get a lot. I have boxes of snail mail because I'd save every letter that was sent to me. But the readers I really love hearing from are the ones, they sort of drive me crazy because they step in and tell me what I should be writing next. I'm working on a series now that each book is based on an old rock song that comes out of a magic jukebox. And I got an email from someone the other day who said, I think your next book in the series should be about Gus and Ed. It should be their story, and the song should be Jerry Rafferty's Right Down the Line. And you know, and I sort of rolled my eyes because I will write that couple story eventually, but not. It's probably going to be the last book in the series because they're continuing characters. But what touched me so much was she was so invested in these mm-hmm. books mm-hmm. That she really, really, they came to life for her. And I also, with the book I mentioned earlier, with the breast cancer survivor, I got a letter from, this was still in the days of snail mail, but she wrote me this letter and she said, you know, of course, like, it's a romance, it ends happily. And at the end she said, you know, I couldn't really believe that heroine would live a long life after her health issues. So I think you should write a sequel in which she is dead. And the hero is this sexy, wonderful widower. And he finds a woman who's healthy and they get to live together. And, you know, after I stopped screaming, I wrote back to her and I said, thank you for your letter. I always respond to my readers. Thank you for your letter, but actually you are wrong. She does live a long, healthy life. I know this. She is my friend. I know this. But, you know, after I calmed down, I realized, again, these readers are so, they relate so personally to what we've written. It's really kind of exciting mm-hmm. when you feel that they are that invested in your story.
Yeah. I come from the science fiction world, so I know the stiff... hello, I am so glad to meet you kind of a thing. Because in science fiction, a lot of the readers feel like they come from another planet, and that's why they, you know, they don't really fit in human society, and that's one of the reasons why we identify with science fiction. And yeah, in romance, it's a little more, it's much more of a welcoming sort of, again, very feminine, you know, sort of sisterly, but I've gotten to meet so many readers of so many different generations and whatnot now too. This is interesting. My mother lives in a gated community in Florida. She's a retiree. She and my dad moved down there the second they retired, and they live in a community that's all other retirees. Like, you have to be 55 or older to live there. And she has a book group, right? She has a book club, and they meet every 2 weeks at someone's house, and they drink wine and they talk about books. And normally they you know, they have an assigned book that they're all supposed to read and, you know, whatnot like that. They used to meet at the Barnes & Noble, but they don't let them drink wine there, so that's why they do it at their houses now, you know. I write erotic romance. I write very, very erotic romance. And they read one of my romances. And, you know, my mother is like, when are you coming down next? Because everyone wants to meet you and have you be our speaker to the book group. And I said, okay, sure. All publicity is good publicity, right? And I had the best time with these women who are all, you know, 60, 70, some of them pushing 80 years old, who were like, we loved your book. Your book is great. But I have some questions. You know? And, you know, these women, they've done it all. They've seen it all. They lived through the wild 60s, you know, this, that, the other. Most of them really strongly consider themselves feminists and... yeah, and some of them were really interested in, like, well, but how much research did you do for this, you know? And they wanted to know all about, you know, like, well, how do modern women meet men nowadays, and, you know, do you really do this, and can you really buy sex toys at Target? I'm like, yes, you can buy sex toys at Target. It was really, that was just fantastic. It was so great. I went in there not really knowing what to expect, and just, you know, yeah, they loved it.
I've just recently started writing again after a long hiatus, so I'm not yet in contact with my readers. But I do have, you know, 3 followers named Moretta on Facebook.
So one thing that is obvious here is the range. I mean, there are evangelical romances, there are Amish romances, there are suspense romances, contemporary of all sorts, time travel, sci-fi, African-American, male-male, lesbian, bondage discipline, sadomasochist romance. Well, that's a pretty big range, you guys, all the way from evangelical to BDSM. So I just point that out. I think we should move on to the last video, and then we'll have time for questions.
Romance writers have led the ebook revolution. They were the first writers to embrace ebook self-publishing. They were the first writers to start achieving commercial success with this, and their readers have propelled it along. The romance reader is a special reader. They are hyper-engaged in the genre. Romance readers are the readers who will read a book a day. They're voracious readers. And when we have this, when we saw this combination of low-priced ebooks, greater availability of romance ebooks, sales just exploded. And even today, when you look at the New York Times ebook best-selling list, you'll see self-published ebooks on that list, and most of them are romance titles. Romance authors have been the most innovative, the most experimental, the most forward-looking in this ebook revolution. So I'm just totally blown away and impressed by the intelligence and the foresight of the romance community.
So I think that a lot of people believe that the romance community are people who are behind the times, and I love pointing out that it's quite the opposite, and that romance authors and readers have really been at the forefront of all of these new technological changes. They were really early adopters and very effective users of social media. I mean, they're community builders. They were the first to really figure out ebooks and early lots of readers, because they didn't want bags full of heavy books because they're such voracious readers. A lot of romance readers switched over to e-readers before other people did. They were also the first to really pioneer indie publishing. Which started out being considered vanity press. I mean, in 3 years that I was shooting my film, I saw this change happen in front of my eyes, where it was an embarrassing thing to self-publish at the beginning. The second year, it was like whispered about, like, oh my God, you know, you could do this thing and you could earn 70 cents on the dollar instead of 15 cents on the dollar. They were all like buzzing, but afraid that their publishing houses would hear them, so there were little groups meeting in lobbies of conference hotels going, oh my God, you know, Courtney knows how to do this, you know. And then the third year that I was shooting, there were, at Romance Writers of America, at their national conference, there were like 10 panels on independent publishing, how to do it. And those sessions were packed to the rafters, and people had figured it out. And instead of hoarding their knowledge, they were sharing it with everybody else who was there. So I just put it to you guys, where are things headed in this digital revolution? Where do you think, for romance and also more broadly for books, where is this all going?
Well, I'll start. I am now exclusively independently publishing. After many, many years working with publishers, I would just say one more reason that romance lovers and romance readers quickly adapted to buying ebooks is that they get ridiculed when they're in public places reading a romance novel. And when you're holding a Kindle or an iBooks e-reader or tablet or whatever, no one can see what you're reading. They can't see the Fabio cover or whatever. So it afforded readers a level of privacy that that they didn't have with the paper editions. It also economized it, and our readers are voracious readers. They read, you know, romance readers read upwards of 20 to 30 books a month, and e-books are cheaper, they're easier, you don't have to have a lot of acreage on your bookshelves. I mean, my bookshelves are all triple stacked, and I don't even want to tell you how many books I have on my Kindle queue. Mm-hmm. You can buy a lot of books and not have to worry about where you're going to stash them. I think the ebook revolution in romance. I'm writing my mysteries as indie published ebooks also. It affords the writer a lot more flexibility because you do not have to be a mass market seller anymore. You can be a narrow market seller and make as much money because you're getting much more of the royalties. So I don't have to worry about appealing to, when I write a book, I don't worry about appealing to 200,000 readers. I worry about appealing to my readers, maybe a much smaller group, you know, 40 or 50,000 readers. That's okay because I'm reaching them. I'm able to reach them directly. They can buy my books at a much lower price point than they could have bought them when I was publishing with traditional publishers. And I will earn enough money to be able to support myself doing that. So I think it offers a lot of flexibility. It's a lot of hard work, and there's a whole new industry growing right now of people who, you know, freelance editors, freelance packagers, freelance designers, freelance market consultants, and so on, that you can hire as many or as few as you want. But I would not be surprised if other genres eventually follow us. We've blazed a trail here and made it possible, so...
Yeah, I'm definitely seeing science fiction is coming on the heels of it with more self-publishing and more people, what we call the hybrid author, where you publish some books with your publisher, but then you publish some of your own things on your own as self-published through the Kindle store and so forth. I think what we're just going to continue to see is greater diversity, because when you can self-publish, there's no gatekeepers. That's one of the reasons we've seen an explosion in a lot of different subgenres. Why we've seen really a big rise in gay, lesbian, bi, and trans romance and so forth is because things that they felt, you know, that Target would never sell, because Target only picks 50 books a month and that's it. The other 500,000 books being published every month can be every other thing. And then you're going to see, you know, stars rise out of that, just like in music or, you know, any other... artistic endeavor, you know, the more people are doing it, the better it is. So, yeah, and that there is now this sort of viable way to just take the shackles off and publish whatever you want is ultimately, I think, good for the industry and good for readers and good for everyone, because it's like biodiversity, right? There's more of everything, and that's my goal, a world where there's everything, so.
I think in addition, all the trends in society are more toward instant gratification, right? You don't want to wait 2 weeks to get your thing from whatever you order. You want the overnight shipping, right? And with ebooks, I think in addition to avoiding people giving you crap about what you're reading, it's right there. Your flight is delayed. I'm bored. Oh my gosh, I take out my phone and I order a book and I have it right then and there. I don't have to go to the airport bookstore and choose from the four titles that they have available. So I think definitely with ebooks, not only the speed of delivery to the customer, but also the way authors can speed up the process of getting a book to the market. When you're with a traditional publisher, you hand that book in a year before they put it on the shelf. And if you are a super big author to the point where they will stop the presses and put your book like in front of everybody else, like J.K. Rowling, for example, it's still 3 to 4 months. There's only so fast that the traditional publishing market can do. And readers, especially readers who are voracious, nothing is worse, I think, to them than seeing an author say, I just finished this, you know, my next book, it's great. And they're like, yay, that's so exciting, when can I buy it? And you say, oh, in 14 months.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're like, no, we want to know more. With e-publishing, you can say in 2 months. Or something like that. You know, it's a much shorter time to get something to market. And most romance authors are prolific and write more than one book a year, which is unusual in publishing. So for authors who write more, traditional publishing is kind of like a dam that sort of holds you back and says, we just need time to do this stuff. With digital publishing, that's just gone. It's like an outlet around that roadblock of, you know, ordering and the warehousing and the production and the printing and all the stuff that goes into producing a book that will be on the stores and on the shelves in Target.
So I have another question for all of you along the same lines. I hear so many stories, and I've actually witnessed people coming up to book signings and someone signing the latest book that they've just done. And their reader comes up, and they're enthusing about it, and they're excited to get it. And they go, when's the next one coming out?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, these are people who want the next book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the writers are like, oh, my God. You know, like, I just finished this book. It's here. It's in front of you. So I want to talk about that, but also what that means in terms of having to write more than one book a year. I mean, a lot of romance authors told me that to survive financially, they really need to publish at least two, even three books a year. And what does that mean to your lives? I mean, things have speeded up. 10 years ago, I think you could write one book a year. And then it became two, and now it's sort of three. So just talk about that a little bit.
I wrote four books last year, and it was too many. Yeah.
We heard that.
Yeah.
And you were running a press, a publishing house.
And running a publishing house. And I'm still a part-time martial artist and massage therapist, and I'm editing the Baseball Research Journal. But three is very doable. Three seems like a piece of cake compared to four. Like, four was too many, but three is like, okay.
Everybody's got a different pace.
I can handle this, you know? Like, three seems like, well, and it also depends on when a book is a problem book. You know, like, some books are just like, they just flow right along. You know, first draft comes out, it goes off to beta readers. And then there are some where it's like, what is happening with this book? I mean, I'm on my third rewrite now of a book that is due to was due to a publisher, you know, and they've actually now pushed off the release date, which is still next year, because I'm like, I don't know, guys, Act 3 is not coming together. I need some more time. You know, I need more time. It's like, when you're knitting a sweater, you know, you can't just knit faster. You know, you have to knit every single stitch, and then when you make a mistake and you have to unravel it, then you just, it takes the same amount of time to go back and do it again. So that's the stage I'm in right now. So, yeah.
I want to make sure we have time for questions from the audience, but do you guys have comments on that question too? Go ahead.
I would just say that one of the advantages of being an independent author is that I can set my own deadlines now. Mm. When I was writing with traditional publishers, I averaged between 3 and 5 books a year. I've thought about retiring. We're done paying the colleges and the weddings and the house and everything else, but I can't retire because I go crazy. There are too many characters still in my head that want to come out. But I can do it at my own pace. I think my readers would like me to write faster, but after 30-something years and 100 books, I think I get to set my own schedule. But there is a lot of pressure to produce, and yes, you know, I hear from the reader saying, and your next book should be this, you know, and I'm thinking, I'm still recovering from my last book. our readers are voracious. They, you know, it's very flattering, but we have to try and maintain our sanity somehow.
It's a good problem to have, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Readers writing saying, when are you going to write about so-and-so characters? I am waiting. I am dying for them. Yeah. Like, you can't write back and be like, you know, I need more time. Like, it's such a good problem to have that your readers are anxiously awaiting your next book. But I would say that, especially as publishing is opening up a little bit, everybody can really set their own pace. If you write for a traditional publisher, again, you're very limited. There's literally only so fast they can produce a book. And they schedule things far ahead of time. Like, my publisher's schedule is already set through the end of, through at least like the mid 2018.
Yeah.
So, you know, if they buy a new author today, she's looking at a long wait to get into the schedule just because that's how they do things. But when you do a little bit of both, it's possible, like this is what I do, I write for a publisher, so I know when those deadlines are and when those books are gonna come out. But then on my own, I write other stuff and I can put it out in the middle. I can put it out whenever I want. So it, you know, it fills more of the space. It gives you more options with different limitations and also different benefits.
We open it up to questions. Anybody who has a question, come up to a mic, please. Two mics. There's one here and one in the middle. Come on up, please.
Hello. Okay. I'm not used to speaking into a microphone, but I guess I have a question about the thing that's staring me in the face, not your grandma's romance. So we haven't really talked much about history. And I'm really curious, so I'm also not that familiar with the romance genre, so this is really eye-opening to me, so thank you, you know, very glad I was here today. But I guess I'm curious, maybe how has, over time, like what the audience wants? I'm guessing it's pretty much always been women who were very, very interested in the romance genre. How have what they wanted and what they responded to, how has that changed over time?
Judith, you're the most long-term.
Okay, when I first, I sold my first book in 1983. Back then, it was just becoming, it was the start of adding overt sexuality into the books. Before then, they were what are often called sweet romances, which are still, or traditional romances, which are still being published. Our grandmothers did not read books that had such graphic sexuality in them. I mean, even books that are not classified as erotica often have graphic sex scenes in them. I think, again, because of the ebook revolution, there's just a lot more variety in what's available in the books. I mean, I remember when paranormal romance or romantic suspense, the publishers were saying nobody will buy romantic suspense, and in those days we didn't have the option of ebook indie publishing, and authors were just bristling, and some of the biggest names in romance fiction were just saying, screw this, I'm going to write them anyway, and they had enough clout to be able to convince publishers to publish romantic suspense, which of course is a very viable and popular subgenre. Same-sex romances didn't exist in the 80s and even in the 90s. That's been a fairly recent development, and a wonderful addition to the genre. I remember that, you know, it was considered scandalous if your heroine was older than your hero. I mean, these are some of the stipulations. I think the writing style has changed. When I first started publishing, publishers liked a lot of adverbs. You know, it was a more florid style of writing. It's much more streamlined now. I've been getting back the rights to a lot of my old out of print books and revising them and updating them and publishing them as ebooks on my own now. And I'm always kind of startled. We were talking about this earlier today about how many of my old books, the plot hinged on finding a payphone, which doesn't work in 2016. Uh-huh. I've just noticed how much my own voice as a writer has changed. It's come back to being my voice because I had to change it back in the 80s to suit my publishers more. And now it's much more streamlined again and much more humorous. Romantic comedy, that didn't really exist back in the olden days either. I mean, your Regencies had a certain comic in the classical definition of comedy, which is in classical theater, a comedy was a play that ended with a marriage. So, you know, when you go back to the ancient Greeks, the comedies always ended in a marriage, the tragedies always ended in blood and gore. And Shakespeare, his comedies always end in some kind of lover reconciliation. So for a very brief history lesson here, that is our tradition. So all romances in that sense are comedies, but laugh out loud comedies really became popular in the 90s and early 2000s with writers like, you know, Jenny Cruzzi, who was a real pioneer in that, and others. I've written a few comedies too. So there's been a lot more openness about what romances can be, a lot more variety in the author's voice. It's evolved a lot.
I think that it's the writers and the readers who've pushed and made this all happen. I just want to open up for like maybe one more question, because we were, and anybody who needs to go to run off to their next session can feel free to, but please, just one more question, a last question. Anyone?
You really need a billionaire to sweep in and fix all of your problems. So I've liked some of the more modern romances where people can make their own choices and fix their own problems, but they still can have a relationship at the same time. I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about that.
That's a great way to end. Go ahead, guys.
Well, the thing that's interesting is that people, I think that it's the billionaire sweeps in and fixes the heroine's problems, but it's most of those billionaire romances are actually the heroine is the one who sweeps in and fixes the billionaire's problems. You know, and for a lot of us, that's our ultimate fantasy, is that, you know, he's a billionaire, but that's still, you know, but he's not happy, you know, and that it's about that search for happiness, ultimately. And everyone's got a different definition of happiness or their wish fulfillment of what they think happiness is going to be, and that's what's great about the diversity, is that now there are so many different definitions, but yeah.
Yeah, I think one of the ultimate feminist themes of romance is that ultimately these are stories about a man who wants this woman so much that he will change for her.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you read a lot of romances, you will discover that the hero is usually the one who has to change. That billionaire is lonely, he's bitter, he's vindictive, whatever. He's
whatever,
got all kinds
yeah.
of issues. And he meets this heroine, and she is so strong and noble and has such great values, and she's good in bed too, whatever. But he has to change to win her love. And that is a really powerful fantasy for women. I hope it's not a fantasy. I hope it's a reality for us.
I think that's one of the common themes through yeah. romance. What, you know, the relationship ends up having to be like on her terms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever your baggage is to the hero, this is not going to work between us if you are going to continue being like that. You know, this has to be on my terms. This is what I require and demand of my partner in a relationship. And so, yeah, I think that that's really the theme of most romance. You know, he may want her desperately and be a billionaire and have all the power in the relationship, but she's the one in the end who's like, this is what it takes for us to be together, and if you can't do it, then bye-bye.
There's just a caveat there. Not all romances are good romances. So, you know, if you pick one up and the billionaire sweeps in and rescues the heroine, you probably don't want to read that author again, or give it to your daughter.
And I will thank all of you, but also say that also for those of you who haven't read a lot of romance, there are the billionaires in some of these books, but there also are Navy SEALs and vampires and werewolves and modern women who are, you
sometimes
know,
she's the billionaire.
She's the billionaire, she's the billionaire. Lawyer,
the
whatever.
CEO.
So there's a whole huge range of books. I will remind you that this fabulous panel, their books are for sale right outside this room. And thank you all very, very much.
Thank you.
Thank you all for coming.